This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents All the Little Lights by Jamie McGuire, performed by Carissa Vacker and Daryl Dennis. For Eden McGuire, the strongest person I've ever had the honor of knowing.
Prologue, Elliot. The old oak tree I'd climbed was one of a dozen or more on Juniper Street. I'd chosen that particular wooden giant because it was standing right next to a white picket fence, one just tall enough for me to use as a step to the lowest branch. It didn't matter that the heels of my hands, knees, and shins were scraped and bleeding from the sharp bark and branches. Feeling the sting from the wind grazing over my open wounds reminded me that I'd fought and won. It was the blood that bothered me. Not because I was squeamish, but because I had to wait until it stopped oozing to keep it from smearing on my new camera. 10 minutes after I was settled against the trunk, my backside balancing 20 or so feet in the air on a branch older than me, the crimson stopped seeping. I smiled. I could finally properly maneuver my camera. It wasn't brand new, but an early 11th birthday present from my aunt. I usually saw her 2 weeks after my birthday, on Thanksgiving, but she hated giving me presents late. Aunt Lee hated a lot of things, except for me and Uncle John. I peered through the viewfinder, moving it over the endless acres of grass, wheat, and gently rolling hills. There was a makeshift alley behind the fences of the houses that ran along the street my aunt lived on. Two tire tracks bordering a strip of grass were all that separated the backyards of our neighbors from an endless sea of wheat and canola fields. It was monotonous, but when the sun set and oranges, pinks, and purples splashed across the sky, I was sure there was no place more beautiful. Oak Creek wasn't the desolate disappointment my mom described, but it was a whole lot of used to's. Oak Creek used to have a strip mall, used to have a TGNY, used to have an arcade, used to have tennis courts and a walking track around one of the parks, but now it was empty buildings and boarded up windows. We'd only visited every other Christmas before Mom and Dad's fights got so bad she didn't want me to witness them. And they seemed to get worse in the summers. The first day of summer break, Mom dropped me off at Uncle John and Aunt Lee's after an all-night fight with Dad. And I noticed she never took off her sunglasses, even in the house. That's when I knew it was more than a visit, that I was staying for the whole summer. And when I unpacked, the amount of clothes in my suitcase proved me right. The sky was just beginning to turn, and I snapped a few pictures, checking my settings. Aunt Lee wasn't the warm and fuzzy type, but she felt bad enough for me to buy a decent camera. Maybe she was hoping I'd stay outside more, but it didn't matter. My friends asked for PlayStations and iPhones, and then they magically appeared. I didn't get what I asked for very often, so the camera in my hands was more than a gift. It meant someone was listening. The sound of a door opening drew my attention from the setting sun, and I watched the father and daughter carry on a quiet conversation as they walked into the backyard. The man was carrying something small, wrapped in a blanket. The girl was sniffling, her cheeks wet. I didn't move, didn't breathe. Afraid they would see me and I would ruin whatever moment they were about to have. It was then that I noticed a hole next to the trunk of the tree. Beside it, a small pile of red dirt. "Careful," the girl said. Her hair was a little bit blonde, a little bit brown, and the red around her eyes from crying made the green in them glow. The man lowered the small thing into the hole, and the girl began to cry.
"I'm sorry, princess. Goober was a good dog."
I pressed my lips together. The chuckle I was fighting was inappropriate, but I still found humor in a funeral for something with a name like Goober. A woman let the back door slam behind her, her tightly wound, dark curls puffy in the humidity. She wiped her hands on a dish towel at her waist. "I'm here," she said, breathless. She froze, staring down into the hole. "Oh, you already..." She blanched and then turned to the girl. "I'm so sorry, honey." As the mother stared at Goober, his small paw poking out of the baby blanket he'd been loosely wrapped in, she seemed to get more upset by the second.
"But I can't stay."
"Mavis," the man said, reaching out for his wife. Mavis's bottom lip trembled.
"I am so sorry."
She retreated to the house. The girl looked to her father.
"It's okay, Daddy."
He hugged his daughter to his side. "Funerals have always been hard for her. Just tears her up."
"And Goober was her baby before me,"
the girl said, wiping her face.
"It's okay."
"Well, we should pay our respects. Thank you, Goober, for being so gentle with our princess. Thank you for staying under the table to eat her vegetables." She peeked up at her dad, and he down at her. He continued. "Thank you for the years of fetching and loyalty and..."
"Snuggles at night," the girl said, wiping her cheek. "And kisses. And for laying at my feet while I did my homework. And for always being happy to see me when I came home."
The man nodded once, and then he took the shovel propped against the fence and began filling the hole. The girl covered her mouth, muffling her cries. Once her father was finished, they had a moment without words. Then she asked to be alone, and he allowed it, nodding before returning to the house. She sat next to the mound of dirt, picking at the grass, just being sad. I wanted to watch her through my viewfinder and capture that moment, but she would hear my camera click, and I would look like a huge creeper, so I remained still and let her grieve. She sniffled.
"Thank you for protecting me."
I frowned. Wondering what Goober had protected her from, and if she needed protection still. She was about my age, and prettier than any girl who went to my school. I wondered what happened to her dog, and how long she'd lived in the massive house that loomed over the backyard and cast a shadow across the street onto the other houses when the sun moved into the western sky. It bothered me not knowing if she was sitting on the ground because she felt safer with her dead dog than she did inside. The sun dropped out of sight and night settled in, the crickets chirping, the wind hissing through the oak's leaves. My stomach was beginning to gurgle and growl. Aunt Lee was going to rip me a new one when I got home from missing dinner. But the girl was still sitting next to her friend, and I'd decided over an hour before that I wasn't going to disturb her. The back door opened, a warm yellow light brightening the backyard.
"Catherine,"
Mavis called.
"It's time to come in now, honey. Your dinner's getting cold. You can come back out in the morning."
Catherine obeyed, standing and walking toward the house, stopping for a moment to look back at the grave once more before going in. When the door closed, I tried to guess what she might be looking for. Maybe she was reminding herself it was real and Goober was gone. Or maybe she was saying one last goodbye. I slowly climbed down, sure to jump and land on the outside of the fence, giving the fresh grave plenty of space. The sound of my shoes crunching against the rocks in the alley stirred a few neighborhood dogs, but I completed the return trek in the dark without any problems. Until I got home. Aunt Lee was standing at the door, her arms crossed. She looked worried at first, but when her eyes found me, instant anger flickered in her eyes. She was in her robe, reminding me of just how late I was. A single gray streak of hair sprouted from her temple, weaving in and out of the thick brown sections of her side braid.
"I'm sorry," I offered.
"You missed dinner," she said, opening the screen door. I walked inside and she followed me. "Your plate's in the microwave. Eat. Then you can tell me where you've been."
"Yes, ma'am,"
I said, making a beeline past her. I passed the wooden, oval dining table to reach the kitchen, opening the microwave to see a foil-covered plate. My mouth instantly watered.
"Take that out,"
Aunt Lee began, but I had already ripped it off, shut the door, and pressed the 2 on the number pad. I watched the plate turn in a circle under the glow of a warm yellow light. The steak began to sizzle, and the gravy on the mashed potatoes bubbled.
"Not yet,"
Aunt Lee snapped when I reached for the microwave handle. My stomach gurgled.
"If you're so hungry, why did you wait so long to get home?"
"I was stuck in a tree," I said, reaching in the second the microwave beeped.
"Stuck in a tree?"
Aunt Lee handed me a fork as I passed and followed me to the table. I shoveled the first bite in and hummed, taking 2 more before Aunt Lee could ask another question. My mom was a good cook, too, but the older I got, the more starved I felt. No matter how many times I ate during the day, or how much I ate at a time, I never felt full. I couldn't get food, any food, in my stomach fast enough. Aunt Lee made a face as I hunched over my plate to create a shorter trip from the plate to my mouth.
"You're going to have to explain that," Aunt Lee said.
When I didn't stop, she leaned over to place her hand on my wrist.
"Elliot, don't make me ask again."
I tried to chew quickly and swallow, nodding in compliance.
"The huge house down the street has an oak tree. I climbed it."
"So?"
"So, while I was up there waiting for a good shot with my camera, the people came out."
"The Calhouns? Did they see you?" I shook my head, sneaking another quick bite.
"You know that's Uncle John's boss, right?"
I stopped chewing.
"No."
Aunt Lee sat back. "Of all the trees to pick."
"They seem nice."
"And sad."
"Why?"
At least for the moment, she forgot about being mad. "They're burying something in the backyard. I think their dog died."
"Aw, that's too bad,"
Aunt Lee said, trying to muster up sympathy. She didn't have children or dogs, and she seemed okay with that. She scratched her head, suddenly nervous.
"Your mom called today."
I nodded, taking another bite. She let me finish, waiting patiently for me to remember to use a napkin.
"What does she want?"
"Sounds like her and your dad are working things out. She sounds happy." I looked away, clenching my teeth. "She always is at first." I turned to her. "Has her eye even healed?"
"Elliot!"
I stood, picking up my plate and fork, taking them to the sink.
"Did you tell him?"
Uncle John said, scratching his round belly. He was standing in the hall, wearing the navy blue pajama set Aunt Lee had bought him last Christmas. She nodded. He looked to me, acknowledging the disgust on my face.
"Yep, we don't like it either."
"Just now," Aunt Lee said, crossing her arms. "About Mom?" I asked. Uncle John nodded. "It's bullshit."
"Elliot!"
Aunt Lee scolded.
"It's okay for us not to like her going back to someone who hits her," I said.
"He's your dad," Aunt Lee said.
"What does that matter?"
Uncle John asked. Aunt Lee sighed, touching her fingers to her forehead. "She won't like us discussing this with Elliot. If we want him to keep coming back..."
"You want me to keep coming back?"
I asked, surprised. Aunt Lee folded her arms over her chest, refusing to toss me that bone. Emotions made her mad, maybe because they were hard to control and that made her feel weak. But for whatever reason, she didn't like to talk about anything that made her feel anything but angry. Uncle John smiled.
"She hides in the bedroom for an hour every time you leave."
"John!"
Aunt Lee hissed. I smiled, but it faded. The sting from my scrapes reminded me of what I'd seen. "Do you guys think that girl's okay?"
"The Calhoun girl?"
Aunt Lee asked.
"Why?"
I shrugged. "I don't know. Just some weird things I saw while I was stuck in the tree."
"You were stuck in a tree?"
Uncle John asked. Aunt Lee waved him away, walking over to me.
"What did you see?"
I'm not sure. Her parents seem nice.
Nice enough, Aunt Lee said. Mavis was a spoiled brat in school. Her family owned half the town because of the zinc smelter. But the smelter closed, and one by one they all died of cancer. You know that damn smelter contaminated the groundwater here? There was a big lawsuit against her family. The only thing she has left is that house. It used to be called the Van Meter Mansion, you know. They changed it once Mavis's parents died and she married the Calhoun kid. The Van Meters are hated around here.
Well, that's sad, I said.
Sad? The Van Meters poisoned the town. Half the population is fighting cancer or some complication from cancer. That's the least of what they deserve, if you ask me, especially if you take into account how they treated everyone.
Did Mavis treat you bad? I asked.
No, but she was awful to your mom and Uncle John.
I frowned.
The husband is Uncle John's boss?
He's a good man, Uncle John said. Everyone likes him.
What about the girl? I asked.
Uncle John offered a knowing smile, and I shook my head.
Never mind.
He winked at me.
She's a pretty one, huh?
Nah.
I passed them and opened the basement door, walking down the stairs. Aunt Lee had asked a billion times to rearrange it, buy new furniture and a rug, but I wasn't there enough for it to matter. All I cared about was the camera. And Uncle John gave me his old laptop so I could practice editing the photos. I uploaded the shots I took, unable to concentrate, wondering about the weird girl and her weird family.
Elliot,
Aunt Lee called. My head snapped up, and I glanced at the small, black square clock that sat next to my monitor. I picked it up, in disbelief that 2 hours had passed.
Elliot,
Aunt Lee repeated.
Your mom's on the phone.
I'll call her back in a minute, I yelled. Aunt Lee walked down the steps, cell phone in her hand. She said if you want your own cell phone, you need to talk to her on mine. I sighed and pushed up from my seat, trudging over to Aunt Lee. I took the phone, tapped the display for speakerphone, and sat it on my desk, returning to my work.
Elliot,
Mom said.
Hey.
I talked to your dad. He's back. He wanted to say he's sorry.
Then why doesn't he say it? I grumbled.
What?
Nothing.
You don't have anything to say about him coming home?
I sat back in my chair, crossing my arms.
What does it matter? Not like you ask me or care what I think.
I do too, Elliot. That's why I'm calling.
How's your eye? I asked.
Elliot, Aunt Lee hissed, taking a step forward.
It took a moment for Mom to respond.
It's better.
He promised. He always promises. It's the keeping it when he's mad that's the problem. Mom sighed.
I know, but I have to try.
How about you ask him to try for once? Mom was quiet.
I have. He doesn't have many chances left, and he knows it. He's trying, Elliot.
It's not hard not to put your hands on a girl. If you can't, then just stay away. Tell him that.
You're right. I know you're right. I'll tell him.
I love you. I clenched my teeth. She knew I loved her. But it was hard to remember that saying it back didn't mean I agreed with her or that I was okay with Dad coming home.
Me too.
She breathed out a laugh, but sadness weighed down her words.
It's going to be okay, Elliot. I promise.
I wrinkled my nose.
Don't do that. Don't make a promise unless you can keep it. Sometimes things happen that are out of your control.
A promise isn't a good intention, Mom. She sighed.
Sometimes I wonder who's raising who.
You don't understand, Elliot, but one of these days you will. I'll call tomorrow, okay? I glanced back at Aunt Lee. She was standing at the bottom of the stairs, her disappointment visible even in the dim light.
Yeah, I said, my shoulders sagging. Trying to talk sense into my mom was normally a lost cause, but feeling like the bad guy for it exhausted me. I hung up the phone and held it out to my aunt. Don't look at me like that. She pointed to her nose that made an invisible circle around her face. You think this face is for you? Believe it or not, Elliot, I think you're right. I waited for the but. It never came. Thanks, Aunt Lee. Elliot? Yeah? If you think that little girl needs help, you'll tell me, right? I watched her for a moment and then nodded. I'll keep an eye out.
Chapter 1. Catherine. 9 windows, 2 doors, a wraparound porch, and 2 balconies. That was just the face of our looming 2-story Victorian on Juniper Street. The chipped blue paint and the dusty windows seemed to sing a violent song about the century of relentless summers and brutally cold winters the house had endured. My eye twitched at the faintest tickle on my cheek, and in the next moment my skin was on fire under my palm. I'd slapped the black insect crawling across my face. It had paused there to taste the sweat dripping from my hairline. Dad had always said I couldn't hurt a fly, but watching the house watch me did strange things. Fear was a compelling beast. The cicadas screeched from the heat, and I closed my eyes, trying to block out the noise. I hated the crying, the buzzing of insects, the sound of the earth drying under a triple-digit temperature. A tiny breeze blew through my yard, and a few strands of hair fell into my face while I stood with my navy blue Walmart brand backpack at my feet, my shoulders sore and raw from carrying it across town from the high school. I would have to go inside soon. As hard as I tried to be brave, to talk myself into going inside to breathe the thick, dusty air and climb the stairs that would creak under my feet, a steady knocking from the backyard gave me an excuse not to pass through the double-wide wooden door. I followed the sound. Something hard meeting something harder. An axe to wood, a hammer to bone. Seeing a bronze-skinned boy come into view as I rounded the porch. He was pounding his bloody fist into the bark of our old oak tree, the trunk 5 times thicker than its assailant. The oak's sparse leaves weren't enough to hide the boy from the sun, but he stood there anyway, his not-quite-long-enough T-shirt blotched with sweat. He was either dumb or dedicated, and when the intensity in his eyes chose to target me, I couldn't look away. My fingers pressed together to form a visor just above my forehead, blocking the sunlight enough to change the boy from a silhouette, bringing into view his round-framed glasses and his pronounced cheekbones. He seemed to give up on his plight, bending over to pick a camera up off the ground. He stood, ducking his head under a thick black strap. The contraption dangled from his neck when he dropped it, while his fingers fumbled through greasy, shoulder-length hair. "Hi," he said, the sun reflecting off his braces when he spoke. Not the profoundness I was expecting from a boy who spent his time punching trees. The grass tickled my toes as my flip-flops snapped against the soles of my feet. I took a few steps closer, wondering who he was and why he was standing in our yard. Just as something deep inside told me to run, I took another step. I'd goaded much scarier things. My inquisitiveness almost always beat out reason, a trait my dad said would result in my fate being shared with the unfortunate feline whose story he told as a cautionary tale. Curiosity pushed me forward, but the boy didn't move or speak, patiently waiting for the mystery to overwhelm my sense of self-preservation. "Catherine!" Dad called. The boy didn't flinch. He squinted through the bright sunshine, quietly witnessing me freeze at the sound of my name. I took a few steps backward, grabbing my backpack and running to the front porch. "There's a boy," I said, panting. "In our backyard?" Dad was wearing his usual white-collared button-up, slacks, and a loosened tie. His dark hair was gelled into place, and his tired but kind eyes looked down on me like I'd done something amazing, if completing one full year of the torture that was high school could be considered. He was right. "A boy, huh?" Dad said, leaning over so he could pretend to look around the corner. "From school?" "No, but I've seen him around the neighborhood before. It's the boy who mows the lawns." "Oh," Dad said, slipping my backpack off my shoulders. "That's John and Lee Youngblood's nephew. Lee said he stays with them during the summers. You've never talked to him before?" I shook my head. "Does that mean boys aren't gross anymore? I can't say I'm happy to hear that."
"Dad, why is he in our backyard?"
Dad shrugged.
"Is he tearing it up?"
I shook my head.
"Then I don't care why he's in our backyard, Catherine. The question is, why do you?"
"Because he's a stranger and he's on our property."
Dad peeked over at me.
"And he's cute."
I twisted my expression into disgust.
"Ew! Dads aren't supposed to ask things like that. And no."
Dad thumbed through the mail, a satisfied grin barely stretching against his 5 o'clock shadow.
"Just checking."
I leaned back, peering down the stripe of grass between our house and the bare plot of dirt that used to belong to the Fentons, before Mr. Fenton's widow died and their kids had the house bulldozed. Mama said she was glad, because as bad as their house smelled from the outside, it had to have been worse on the inside, like something had died deep within.
"I was thinking," Dad said,
pulling open the screen door,
"maybe this weekend we can take the Buick for a spin."
"Okay," I said, wondering what he was getting at. He twisted the knob and pushed open the door, gesturing for me to go in.
"I thought you'd be excited. Don't you get your learner's permit soon?"
"So you mean I'm taking the Buick for a spin?"
"Why not?"
he asked. I walked past him into the foyer, letting my bag full of remnant supplies and notebooks from the school year fall to the floor.
"I guess I don't see the point. It's not like I'll have a car to drive."
"You can drive the Buick," he said.
I looked out the window to see if the boy had moved on to assaulting trees in our front yard.
"But you drive the Buick."
He made a face, already impatient with the arguing.
"When I'm not driving the Buick. You need to learn to drive, Catherine. You'll have a car eventually."
"Okay, okay," I said, conceding. "I just meant I'm not in a big hurry. We don't have to do it this weekend. You know, if you're busy."
He kissed my hair.
"Never too busy, Princess. We should clean up the kitchen and start dinner before Mama gets home from work."
"Why are you home early?" I asked.
Dad playfully mussed my hair.
"You are full of questions today. How was the last day of 9th grade? I'm guessing you don't have homework. Any plans with Minka and Owen?"
I shook my head. "Mrs. Vowell asked that we read at least 5 books this summer. Minka is packing, and Owen is going to science camp."
"Oh, right. Minka's family have that summer home in Red River. I forgot. Well, you can hang out with Owen when he gets back."
"Yeah." I trailed off, not knowing what else to say.
Sitting in front of Owen's enormous flat screen to watch him play the latest video game wasn't my idea of a fun summer. Minka and Owen had been my only friends since the 1st grade, when we were all labeled as weird. Minka's carrot top and freckles earned her enough grief, but then she'd made the cheerleading squad in the 6th grade, and that provided her with some reprieve.
Owen spent most days in front of the television playing Xbox and flicking his bangs out of his eyes, but his true passion was Minka. He would forever be her best friend, and we all pretended he wasn't in love with her.
Well, that won't be a problem, will it?
Dad asked. Huh?
The books,
Dad said. Oh, I said, snapping back to the present. No. He peered down at my backpack.
You'd better pick that up. Your mama will fuss at you if she trips over it again.
Depends on what kind of mood she's in, I replied under my breath. I grabbed the bag from the floor and held it to my chest. Dad was always saving me from Mama. I looked up the stairs. The sun was pouring through the window that was at the end of the hall. Dust motes reflected in the light, making me feel like I needed to hold my breath. The air was stale and musty as usual, but the heat made it worse. A bead of sweat formed at the nape of my neck and streamed down, instantly absorbed by my cotton shirt. The wooden stairs whined, even under the pressure of my 110-pound frame, as I climbed to the upper hallway and crossed straight to my bedroom, putting my bag on top of my twin-size bed. "Is the air conditioning out?" I asked, trotting down the stairs.
"No, just turning it off when no one's here to cut costs."
"The air's too hot to breathe."
"I just turned it on. It'll cool off soon."
He glanced at the clock on the wall.
"Your mama will be home in an hour. Let's get a move on."
I picked up an apple from the bowl on the table and took a bite, chewing as I watched Dad roll up his sleeves and turn on the sink water to scrub the day off his hands. He seemed to have a lot on his mind, more than usual. "You okay, Dad?"
"Yep."
"What's for dinner?" I asked, my question muffled by the apple in my mouth.
"You tell me." I made a face, and he laughed. "My specialty. White bean chicken chili."
"It's too hot for chili."
"Okay. Shredded pork tacos, then?"
"Don't forget the corn," I said, setting down the apple core before taking his place at the sink. I filled the basin with warm water and soap. And while the water bubbled and steamed in the background, I made one sweep around the rooms on the main floor for dirty dishes. In the back drawing room, I peered out the window, searching for the boy. He was sitting next to the trunk of the oak tree, looking at the field behind our house through the lens of his camera. I wondered how long he was planning to hang out in our backyard. The boy paused and then turned to catch me watching him. He pointed his camera in my direction and snapped a picture, lowering it to stare at me again. I backed away, unsure if I was embarrassed or creeped out. I returned to the kitchen with the dishes, put them in the sink with the rest, and began to scrub. The water sloshed on my shirt, and while the bubbles washed away the mess, Dad marinated the pork roast and put it in the oven.
"Too hot for chili in the crock pot, but you're okay with turning on the oven,"
Dad teased. He tightened Mama's apron around his waist. The yellow fabric with pink flowers matched the faded damask wallpaper that covered all the main rooms.
"You look dapper, Dad."
He ignored my jab and opened the fridge, sweeping his arm in dramatic fashion.
"I bought a pie."
The refrigerator hummed in reaction. Accustomed to the struggle of cooling its contents whenever the door opened. Like the house and everything in it, the fridge was twice as old as me. Dad said the dent at the bottom added character. The once white doors were covered in magnets from places I'd never been, and dirty splotches from stickers Mama had placed when she was a girl, only to remove as an adult. That fridge reminded me of our family. Despite appearances, the various parts worked together and never gave up.
"A pie?"
I asked.
"To celebrate your last day of ninth grade."
"That does call for a celebration. 3 whole months without Presley and the clones." Dad frowned. The Brubaker's girl still giving you trouble?
Presley hates me, Dad, I said, scrubbing the plate in my hand. She always has.
Oh, I remember a time when you were friends.
Everyone is friends in kindergarten, I grumbled.
What do you think happened?
He asked, closing the fridge. I turned to him. The thought of recalling every step along the way that changed Presley and her decision to be friends with me did not sound appealing at all. When did you buy the pie?
Dad blinked and fidgeted. What, honey?
Did you get the day off?
Dad sported his best painted-on smile, the kind that didn't touch his eyes. He was trying to protect me from something he didn't think my barely 15-year-old heart could handle.
My chest felt heavy. They let you go.
It was time, kiddo. The price of oil has been down for months. I was just one layoff of 72 in my department. There will be more tomorrow.
I looked down at the plate, half submerged in the murky water. You're not just one of 72.
We'll be okay, Princess. I promise.
I rinsed the suds off the plate in my hand, looking at the clock, realizing why Dad had been so preoccupied with the time. Mama would be home soon, and he would have to tell her. Dad always saved me from Mama, and as much as I tried to do the same for him, there was no way to soften her wrath this time. We were just getting used to hearing Mama's laughter again, to sitting down at dinner and discussing our days instead of what bills were due. I placed the clean plate on the counter.
I believe you. You'll find something.
His big hand fell softly on my shoulder.
Of course I will. Finish the dishes and wipe down the counters, and then take out the trash for me, would you?
I nodded, leaning into him when he kissed my cheek.
Your hair's getting longer. That's good.
I pulled at some of the tawny strands closest to my face with my wet fingertips. Maybe a little.
Are you finally going to grow it out some?
He asked, hope in his voice. I know, you like it long.
Guilty,
he said, poking my side.
But you wear it the way you like. It's your hair.
The hands on the clock made me work faster, wondering why Dad wanted Mama to come home to a clean house and dinner on the table. Why make sure she's in a good mood just to break bad news? Until the past few months, Mama had been worrying about Dad's job. Once a haven for retirees, our small town had been deteriorating around us. Too many people and not enough jobs. The large oil refinery in the next city over had merged, and most of the offices had already been relocated to Texas.
Are we going to move?
I asked, putting away the last of the pans. The thought lit a spark of hope in my chest.
Dad chuckled. It takes money to move. This old house has been in Mama's family since 1917. She might never forgive me if we sold it.
It's okay if we have to sell it. It's too big for us anyway.
Catherine?
Yes?
Don't mention selling the house to your mama, okay? You'll just upset her more.
I nodded, wiping the countertops. We finished picking up the house in silence. Dad looked lost in his own thoughts, probably going over in his head how he would break the news. I left him alone, seeing that he was nervous. That made me worry because he'd become a pro at calming her explosive outbursts, her nonsensical rants. He let it slip once that he'd been perfecting his strategies since high school. When I was little, before bed at least once a week, Dad told me the story of how he fell in love with her. He asked her out the first week of ninth grade and defended her against the bullying she endured over her family's smelter. The byproducts had seeped into the soil and then the groundwater, and every time someone's mom fell ill, every time someone was diagnosed with cancer, it was the Van Meter's fault. Dad said that my grandfather was a cruel man, but he was the worst to Mama, so much that it was a relief when he died. He warned me to never speak of it in front of her and to be patient with what he called outbursts. I tried my best to ignore her outbursts and vicious remarks to Dad. The abuse she suffered was always in her eyes, even 20 years after Grandfather's death. The gravel in the driveway crunched under the tires of Mama's Lexus, snapping me to the present. The driver's side door was open, and she was bent over, retrieving something from the floorboards. I watched her search feverishly, holding trash bags in each of my hands. I put the bags in the dumpster by the garage and closed the lid, wiping my hands on my denim shorts. "How was your last day of 9th grade? Mama asked, swinging her purse around her shoulder. No more being the low man on the totem pole. Her smile pushed up her rosy, full cheeks, but she barely navigated the gravel in her high heels, carefully walking toward the front gate. She was holding a small bag from the pharmacy that had already been opened. I'm glad it's over, I said. Oh, it wasn't that bad, was it? She gripped her keys in her hand, kissed my cheek, and then stopped short of the porch. A runner in her pantyhose climbed from her knee to under her skirt, and one dark spiral of hair had fallen from her high bun to hang in her face. How was your day? I asked. Mama had worked in the drive-through of First Bank since she was 19. Her commute was only about 20 minutes, and she enjoyed using that time to wind down, but the best thing Mama had ever called the other two women she worked with was condescending skags. The small drive-through building was detached from the main bank, and working day in and day out in that tiny space made whatever problems the women had seem much bigger. The longer she worked there, the more pills she needed. The open bag in her hand was a sure sign she'd already had a bad day, even if it was just because she remembered her life wasn't panning out the way she'd planned. Mama had a habit of focusing on the negative. She tried to be different. Books like Finding Contentment and Processing Anger the Healthy Way made up most of our library shelves. Mama meditated and took long baths listening to soothing music, but it didn't take much for her anger to surface. Her rage was always simmering, building, waiting for something or someone to create an escape. She jutted out her bottom lip and blew the loose curl away. Your dad is home. I know. She didn't take her eyes from the door.
Why?
He's cooking.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
She rushed up the stairs and yanked open the screen door, letting it slam behind her. At first, I couldn't hear them, but it didn't take long for Mama's panicked cries to filter through the walls. I stood in the front yard, listening to the yelling get louder as Dad tried to reassure his wife, but she wasn't having it. She lived in the world of what-ifs, and Dad insisted on the right now. I closed my eyes and held my breath, hoping at any moment the silhouettes in the window would collide, and Dad would hold Mama while she cried until she wasn't scared anymore. I looked up at our house, the lattice covered in dead vines, the railing wrapping around the porch in need of a new coat of paint. The window screens were choked with dust, and the boards in the porch needed replacing. The outside only looked more ominous as the sun moved across the sky. Our home was the biggest on the block, one of the largest in town, and created its own shadow. It had been Mama's house and her mother's before her, but it never felt like home. There were too many rooms and too much space to fill with echoes and angry whispers my parents didn't want me to hear. Moments like this, I missed the hushed rage. Now it was spilling out into the street. Mama was still pacing, and Dad was still standing next to the table, pleading with her to listen. They yelled while the shadows from the shade trees moved across the yard until the sun was hovering just above the horizon. The crickets began to chirp, signaling sunset wasn't far away. My stomach growled as I picked at the grass. I'd resorted to sitting on our uneven sidewalk, still warm from the summer sun. The sky was splotched in pinks and purples, and the sprinklers hissed and sprayed our yard, but the war didn't seem like it would end anytime soon. Juniper Street was only busy with cars trying to avoid after-school traffic. After everyone had clocked out and reached home, we were back to being the quiet edge of town. I heard a click and a winding sound behind me and turned. The boy with the camera was standing on the opposite side of the road, his odd contraption still in his hand. He lifted it one more time and snapped another photo, pointing it in my direction. "You could at least pretend not to be taking pictures of me?" I snarled.
"Why would I do that?"
"Because taking pictures of a stranger without her permission is a creepy thing to do."
"Who says?"
I looked around, offended by his question. "Everyone. Everyone says." He placed the cap on his lens and then stepped off the curb into the street.
"Well, everyone didn't see what I just saw through my lens, and it was anything but creepy."
I glared at him, trying to decide if he'd just complimented me or not. While my arms remained crossed, my expression softened. "My dad said you're Miss Lee's nephew?" He nodded, pushing his glasses up the bridge of his shiny nose. I glanced back at the parent-size shapes in my window, and then back at the boy.
"Are you here for the summer?"
He nodded again. "Do you speak?" I seethed. He grinned, amused.
"Why are you so angry?"
"I don't know," I snapped, closing my eyes again. I took a deep breath and then peeked from under my lashes. "Don't you get mad?" He shifted.
"Just like everyone else, I guess."
He nodded toward my house.
"Why are they yelling?"
My dad lost his job today."
"Does he work for the oil company?"
he asked.
"He did." "So did my uncle, until today,"
he said. He suddenly looked vulnerable.
"Don't tell anyone."
"I can keep a secret." I stood, brushing off my shorts. When he didn't say anything, I begrudgingly offered my name. "I'm Catherine."
"I know. I'm Elliot. Want to walk down to Brahms with me for an ice cream cone?"
He was half a head taller than me, but by the looks of it, we weighed the same. His arms and legs were too long and skinny, and he hadn't quite grown into his ears. His high cheekbones protruded enough to make his cheeks appear sunken, and his long, stringy hair didn't help the appearance of his oval face. He stepped across the cracked asphalt, and I pushed through the gate, glancing over my shoulder. The house was still watching me, and it would wait for me to come back. My parents were still yelling. If I went inside, they would stop long enough to take the fighting into their bedroom, but that just meant I would have to listen to Mama's muffled wrath for the rest of the night. "Sure," I said, turning to face him. He looked surprised. "Do you have money? I'll have to pay you back. I'm not going back in there for my wallet." He nodded, patting his front pocket as proof.
"I've got you covered. I mow the lawn for the neighbors."
"I know," I said.
"You know?"
he asked, a small, surprised smile on his face. I nodded and shoved my fingers into the shallow pockets of my jean shorts and, for the first time, left home without permission. Elliot walked beside me, but at a respectable distance. He didn't speak for a block and a half, and then he wouldn't stop.
"Do you like it here?"
he asked.
"In Oak Creek?"
"Not really."
"What about the school? What's that like?"
"I liken it to torture." He nodded as if I'd confirmed a suspicion.
My mom grew up here, and she always talked about how much she hated it.
Why?
Most of the First Nation kids went to their own school. Her and Uncle John got a lot of guff for being the only two Native kids at Oak Creek. They were pretty mean to her.
Like what?
I asked. He frowned. Their house was vandalized, and so was her car. But I just know that from Uncle John. All Mom has told me was that the parents are small-minded and the kids are worse. I'm not sure how to take it.
Take what?
His eyes fell to the road. That she sent me to a place she hates.
I asked for luggage for Christmas 2 years ago. Dad bought me a set. I'm filling them the second I get home from graduation, and I'll never come back.
When is that? Your graduation?
I sighed. 3 more years.
So you're a freshman? Or were? Me too.
But you're here every summer? Don't you miss your friends?
He shrugged. My parents fight a lot. I like coming here. It's quiet.
Where are you from?
Oklahoma City. UConn, actually.
Oh, yeah? We play you in football.
Yep. I know. Puke on UConn. I've seen the Oak Creek banners.
I fought a smile. I'd made a few of those banners with Minka and Owen during pep club meetings after school. Do you play?
Yeah, like 7th string. I'm getting better, though. That's what the coach says, anyway.
The Brahms sign loomed high above us, giving off a pink and white neon glow. Elliot swung the door open, and the air conditioning blasted my skin. My shoes stuck to the red tile floor. Sugar and grease saturated the air, and families gathered in the dining area, chattering about summer plans. The pastor of the First Christian Church stood next to one of the bigger tables with his arms crossed over his middle, trapping his red tie, while he caught up with some of his flock about church events and his disappointment in the level of the local lake. Elliot and I approached the counter. He gestured for me to order first. Anna Sue Gentry manned the register, her bleached blonde ponytail swinging when she made a show of assessing our relationship.
"Who's this, Catherine?"
she asked, raising an eyebrow at the camera dangling from Elliot's neck.
"Elliot Youngblood," he said before I could answer.
Anna Sue stopped addressing me altogether, her big green eyes sparkling when the tall boy next to me proved he wasn't afraid to speak to her.
"And who are you, Elliot? Catherine's cousin?"
I made a face, wondering what about us drew her to that conclusion.
"What?"
Anna Sue shrugged.
"Your hair is about the same length. Same awful haircut. I thought maybe it was a family thing."
Elliot looked to me, unaffected.
"Mine's longer, actually."
"So not cousins,"
Anna Sue said.
"Did you trade in Minka and Owen for this one?"
"Neighbor."
Elliot shoved his hands into his khaki cargo shorts, already unimpressed. She wrinkled her nose.
"What are you, homeschooled?"
I sighed.
"He's staying with his aunt for the summer. Can we order, please?"
Anna Sue shifted her weight from one hip to the other, gripping each side of the register. The sour expression on her face didn't surprise me. Anna Sue was friends with Presley. They looked alike, with the same shade of blonde hair, style, and thick black eyeliner, and they made the same face when I was around. Elliot didn't seem to notice. Instead, he pointed to the board above Anna Sue's head.
"I'll have a banana fudge sundae."
"With nuts?"
she asked, apparent that her question was obligatory. He nodded and then looked at me.
"Catherine?"
"Orange sherbet, please."
She rolled her eyes.
"Fancy. Anything else?"
Elliot frowned.
"No."
We waited while Anna Sue lifted a clear lid and dug at the sherbet in the freezer behind the clear barrier. After she'd rolled it into a ball with a silver scoop, and steadied it onto the cone,
She handed it to me and then began Elliot's sundae. I thought you said we were just getting cones, I said.
He shrugged. I changed my mind. Thought it'd be nice to sit in the AC for a while.
Anna Sue sighed as she placed Elliot's order on the counter. Banana fudge sundae. Elliot chose a table by the window, and he passed a few napkins across to me before digging into the vanilla and fudge sauce like he'd been starving. Maybe we should have ordered dinner, I said. He looked up, wiping a smear of chocolate from his chin.
We still can.
I looked down at my dripping ice cream. I didn't tell my parents I was leaving. I should probably get home soon. Not that they've noticed I've left.
I heard them fighting. I'm sort of an expert at that. Sounds like an all-nighter to me.
I sighed. It won't stop until he finds another job. Mama is sort of neurotic.
My parents fight about money all the time. My dad thinks if he's not making $40 an hour, he can't work. As if a dollar isn't better than zero. Then he gets laid off all the time.
What does he do?
He's a welder, which is awesome because he's gone a lot.
It's a pride thing, I said. My dad will find something. Mama just tends to freak out. He smiled at me. What?
Mama. That's cute.
I sank back into my seat, feeling my cheeks burn. She doesn't like it when I call her mom. She says I'm trying to pretend I'm older than I am. It's just habit. He watched me squirm with amusement, and then he finally spoke.
I've called my mom since I could talk.
I'm sorry, I know it's strange, I said, looking away. Mama's always been particular about things.
Why are you apologizing? I just said it was cute.
I shifted, sliding my free hand between my knees. The air conditioning was on full blast like most businesses in Oklahoma during the summer. In winter, you layered because it was too hot inside. In summer, you wore a jacket because it was too cold. I licked the tangy sweetness from my lips. I wasn't sure if you were being condescending. Elliot began to speak, but a small group of girls approached our table. Aww, Presley said, dramatically touching her chest. Catherine got herself a boyfriend. I feel so bad that all this time we thought you were lying about him being from out of town. Three carbon copies of Presley, Tara and Tatum Martin and Bree Burns, all giggled and tossed their bleached blonde tresses. Tara and Tatum were identical twins, but they all strived to look like Presley. Maybe just outside of town, Bree said. Like a reservation, maybe? Oklahoma doesn't have reservations, I said, appalled by her stupidity. Yeah, they do, Bree argued.
You're thinking of tribal land, Elliot said, unfazed.
I'm Presley, she said to Elliot, smug. I looked away, not wanting to witness their introduction, but Elliot didn't move or speak, so I turned to see what was holding up their exchange. Elliot offered me a small grin, ignoring Presley's outstretched hand. She made a face and crossed her arms. Is Bree right? Do you live in White Eagle? Elliot raised an eyebrow.
That's the headquarters for the Poncha tribe.
And? Presley snapped. Elliot sighed, seeming bored.
I'm Cherokee.
So that's an Indian, right? Isn't White Eagle for Indians? She asked. Just go away, Presley, I pleaded, worried she would say something even more offensive. Excitement sparked in Presley's eyes. Wow, Kit Kat, are we getting a little big for our britches? I looked up at her, anger blazing in my eyes. It's Catherine. Presley led them to a booth across the room, continuing to tease Elliot and me from afar. I'm so sorry, I whispered. They're just doing it because you're with me.
Because I'm with you?
They hate me, I grumbled.